Discussions with the Jiang Zhiqin in Taipei, September 2018. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Nina, Sukin, Jonathan, Sarah, Thumb, Vincent, Nana, and Chung.
I just mentioned that I just feel like a dream, and Ajahn said it doesn't stay. And I said, it's a pity it doesn't stay.
That was all.
Why it's not a dream? Because dreaming is only thinking. And now there is that which appears and the thinking follow all the time. So it's just like the dream. But when it's the moment of falling asleep, there can be another kind of dream because there's no appearance of that which is seen now, heard now.
Yes.
This is only difference.
It is difficult to know it as anama, a reality which experienced something. Because yesterday at the lunchtime we touched on this subject a little, but there are still many things I don't understand, because you said that loba and dosa are only words to us.
Because even seeing now sees, and everyone understands it is not I. But the characteristic which is now experiencing that which is seen does not appear as not I. And we can classify them as one is that which is nama and the other is rupa. That is also does not appear as it is. That's why there should be the understanding of the characteristic which is not self. When we say the characteristic is experience, the nama, that characteristic which doesn't have any rupa, is there. And Panya understands that. Not just like nama we used to say, to speak all the time, that seeing is nama, thinking is nama, feeling is nama, because the characteristic of nama does not appear now. But by then, when Panya is sharper and when it's developed, no need to speak out or even to think, but there can be even thinking in between to see the difference between seeing and thinking. They are namas. So the meaning of nama get clear.
But especially to know it as different from rupa.
Yes, because we just talk about the seeing and that which is seen. One is that which experiences and the other cannot experience. Just think about it. But the characteristic which does not experience and that which experience hasn't been known yet.
Not yet, no.
So there must be the moment of knowing better and better. When we use the term nama and rupa, it represents realities. And their characteristics appear one by one.
Yes. But what I thought is that the characteristic of loba cannot be known yet if it is not clear that nama is different from rupa.
Whenever there is loba, does the experiencing the citta appear?
No, because loba is a subject.
That's why even at that moment, it depends on what characteristic is there for Panya to penetrate and understand the truth.
Yes.
Ajahn, when you say that when there's direct understanding of the characteristic, there's no need to call it anything, no need to label.
But no one can stop thinking, so it depends.
Right. But also this is because there's the understanding that thinking is not understanding. Because just labeling is thinking. When we label, it's thinking. And the understanding is what is important. So one at that time understands that thinking is not understanding. So it's not important to label, but to understand.
Just listen and listen until there are conditions for satipatthana to arise and panya develops until each appears as it is. No need to say nama or rupa or tosa or whatever.
We were discussing yesterday about how when there is understanding of that reality, for example, loba, as Dhamma. It is understanding of Nama at that moment. So it's not, Nama is not something separate from Lobha or seeing at this moment. So when there is understanding now of seeing that reality which experience, it is understanding of Nama. So it's not a matter of having to understand Nama first and then understand seeing or Lobha, because understanding Nama means understanding seeing now or Lobha or whatever is arising and experiencing an object now.
Yes, like Ajahn said, the common characteristic is the experience that should be known. That's what you said yesterday.
Yeah,
that's what you just mentioned. Yes.
That's interesting, Sarah. Because even I had concluded that it's the understanding first understands Nama as Nama and Rupa as Rupa. Of course, when it's Lobha, it's not anything but Lobha that's being experienced. So, but I was thinking that the familiarity with different kinds of Nama, that that is the result of understanding many realities. So the understanding of them as Nama must happen before understanding the different kinds of Nama.
Yeah, that's what I understood before.
It seems like a very, very long story, but at now the seeing, just that Dhamma which experiences what is seen, and when there is understanding right now of seeing as seeing, it is understanding of Nama, not anything separate. And the same now when attachment arises, it clings to the object, attachment instantly to what is seen now. And at the moment of understanding Lobha as Lobha, which clings to that object now, it is understanding of Nama, different from at a moment of when sound appears and is heard, and this understanding is just that sound which is heard, doesn't experience anything. So understanding Nama is not anything different from understanding reality right now, which experiences an object.
I think Ajahn said a minute ago that it depends what aspect Panya takes note of or attends to. And she also said that one has to just listen and consider until Panya arises. So I think the situation is that it's not a matter of one having to precede the other, not a matter of saying there has to be understanding of Nama as Nama and Rupa as Rupa before there can be understanding of the characteristic of Lobha. It just depends on how it develops.
Because if you look at it from another angle, if you mention dosa, if you talk that there's dosa, you're having dosa to a person who has not heard the Dhamma, even he would know the difference between dosa and attachment, but he doesn't know it as a reality. He doesn't know it as Nama. So is he really knowing Lobha or dosa?
Not at all, because it's still the idea of my dosa, my aversion to something. There's no understanding at all of Dhamma. There's no understanding of Nama, even though everyone knows that aversion is different from attachment or different from seeing. That's not understanding anything about dosa as reality. But when there is understanding of dosa, that reality which experiences the object with aversion, just as Dhamma, not as self or anyone, that is understanding dosa as Nama at that moment.
And what Ajahn also stressed yesterday at lunchtime, conditioned, that is conditioned reality. And it helps very much to see it as non-self.
Yes? That's the point, because without hearing the Dhamma, there's no idea about Dhamma as just a Dhamma that is conditioned. It's all, it's the idea of my dosa.
My dosa.
No idea that it's just a conditioned reality. And that's why when someone asks the question, how can I have less dosa, actually it shows no understanding of Dharma as conditioned at all at that moment.
Yes.
And also I think that ordinarily, when people know about dosa, it's just the whole thing together, like dosa and the unpleasant feeling and everything, just the characteristic of dosa at all.
You mentioned in the same conversation, Nina, that Ajahn was reminding you about kanti, patience.
Yeah, that's so important. Because when I ask just now, it's not realized that that moment of asking this question, there is doubt or wanting to know and work it out, you know. And that's an important point. Well, at the moment that question is asked, also there are realities. And we forget that.
Yeah, I was thinking along the same lines. It does show that not only lack of understanding, but lack of patience. Because in the end, we all have to continue listening, as Ajahn says. There's not enough of listening. And whatever is going to be understood requires a lot of listening. So no patience to listening. We're trying to find answers now. No patience to accept that it's going to take a long, long time and step by step, not trying to find answers.
We listen now and we have to consider it, and then we would like to understand it completely now, but we realize that Panya is weak and it cannot be all really understood as it is.
And even more so that when there's trying to understand or wanting to know what Nama is at this moment, there's lack of patience, and also the idea that somehow I can be aware or I can understand too. So patience is very important. Otherwise, if there's no patience to what is conditioned at this moment, no detachment from whatever appears, no matter it's seeing or doubt or dosa or whatever, then it hinders the development of understanding at this very moment.
Yes, at this very moment.
Because it's minding what is the reality, accepting whatever is conditioned, no matter its wrong view or doubt or whatever. Because each one is conditioned, each one is anatta, not my doubt, not my impatience. Yeah. So kanti is very important.
Yeah.
We can see also why Panya is the leader. Because when there's understanding, there's patience. When whatever arises by conditions, you know. So that's how everything is. So that can condition patience too.
Yeah. I guess because Panya can see the danger of not impatience.
If there is no understanding of passion or anything as not self, can there be the elimination of the idea of self? For example, Kunina talk about trying or by hearing more and like that. But that's, you know, that now there is patience or virya already, but it depends on the degree whether we call it virya or patience. So even right now, if there is the understanding at moment of thinking like that, there is already patience. So the understanding of this is the moment of eliminating a little bit by itself, by understanding, not trying different ways, see? So this is quite subtle, because people might think that learn more, listening more, understand the words more, but actually it's not. It has to be the understanding. For example, why there is Virya Chitasika with all Chitasikas except the Ahetuka. It reminds us that even right now it's the unknown. That's why just read and understand each. And at that moment, it will bring just a little bit of not taking realities for self, which will lead to realizing or experiencing directly what we say, nama or rupa, and then because the characteristic of nama means that it's not me, that which is rupa is not self, hasn't happened yet. So even when it's talking about nama or rupa, as long as the characteristic of nama and rupa does not appear, it's still something, like we use the word for mana or lopa or dosa.
Talking about patience, I'm reminded about how often when we ask you about parami, it seems to you like we want to have more barami, and it's the same thing instead of just understanding.
And even when we say there should be more listening or more this or that, actually it can be lack of patience at this moment, or the idea that one should spend more time here listening, that one shouldn't go shopping or something. But that's setting a rule. It's not understanding reality right now. So the listening and considering doesn't depend on, it's not talking about the physical situation, but the considering at this very moment, no matter one's shopping, no matter one's here, no matter in Holland or Thailand. So it always comes back to this moment. And that is the patience to come back to this moment, to what is conditioned right now. Jan, we also yesterday in passing, I think we were talking a little about patience, and we were also talking about, in brief, about Kantiñāna, and we know that the first one refers to just the patience from the third stage of insight to the next stage, and the second one from the fourth stage, understanding of arising and falling away of realities, right up to the Sankharupekka Jnana, and then one to enlightenment. Can you say a little more about the importance of Kanti now, and Kanti as Kanti Jnana, and why there is this, these words about Kanti Jnana and the highly developed Jnana? Is it just to show that when understanding develops highly, Kanti is very important?
We learn to understand the reality from the Buddha's words just a little bit, comparing the understanding of those who listen and his understanding. And this is another word for Kanti. But it's so ordinary. After it has experienced the reality as it is, by then there must be the understanding, so much more to know. Further, to be right now at any time, otherwise it cannot be a moment of enlightenment, because it is I always there lurking here and there, this moment or that moment all the time. So only Panya can know. If it's not this moment, not yet, the understanding which from being Kanti, from hearing before Vipassanayana, and after Vipassanayana, so much to be Kanti, to further on understanding better and better, in order just to eliminate the idea of self. So very deep. That's why Kanti there cannot compare with this moment, Kanti.
If there isn't the development of Kanti now, with understanding, conditioned by understanding and conditioning understanding, then how can there ever be the really highly developed Kanti with detachment from whatever appears at that level?
At that moment of thinking about Kanti, I or Kanti? I or Kanti. But the moment of understanding that is Kanti already, no need to think about develop it. Because any time when there's hearing and understanding, Kanti is there. So if I try to have Kanti, it's wrong again. That's why It's so subtle that only Panya can understand what's there, the I or the understanding. So Kanti, after hearing understanding, it has to be more things to develop by Panya, not by any moment.
It's because we don't have, our understanding is so weak of everything, of Kanti. We're bound to take Kanti for self.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah. Only Panya begins to know little by little, again and again.
Ajahn Kanti is a Virya Chitta Sika. And in the 10 Parami, there's also Virya Parami. And both should be Kusala Virya. So how would you describe the main aspects, different in aspects between these two?
The Kanti and the Virya?
Yes.
No need to think about that. Because it's only words. But one knows, even right now, it's like Virya. See, it cannot be known. But hearing, there is Virya. And on. And the more Virya conditioned or developed, one can see that it's Kanti. Because it has to be so very difficult to go against the current of I and attachment.
And can we also say there are different aspects of Virya, for example, Kanti, which can be Kusala or Akusala, and then, like, when talking about the Parami, there's the aspect of courage. There has to be courage to understand reality at this moment, so this is different aspect of Virya.
So I think that it's not a matter of trying to have the standard for every word or every reality, but it's there, gradually developed.
Like when reading about all the development of paramis for the Bodhisattva, and one reads about the great courage, so this is Virya Parami, as I understand. And like, for example, if there is wrong view now, or lobha now, is there, or ignorance now, or lack of patience, is there courage to understand reality at this moment? So to me, this is a little different from patience to understand, not the word, but the aspect of the realities.
In fact, in conventional usage, it's quite easy to distinguish between patience and effort or energy. So for me, the question would not be how are they different, but how are they the same?
Yes, but when we hear in the Dhamma that patience is virya, mm-hmm. It kind of points to the aspect, this aspect of virya at the moment of being patient. But difficult to put it in words.
When I hear Virya, I understand one thing. When I hear Kanti, I understand another thing. And when told that it's both the same Chetasika, I know that it manifests in different ways, and as Sarah was saying, in different aspects. So no problem, because that's how it is.
What about irritability and anger? So when one's just irritable and when one's angry, it seems different, but same chetasika dosa, but different aspects, or it's manifesting in a different ways. Mm-hmm. Or when there's annoyance, so different kinds of dosa, but all dosa chetasika.
Or worries.
Worry, exactly. So, or fear and worry, quite different, but same chetasika. And at breakfast, Ajahn, you were saying about living in the world of sanya, when I think people were talking about their activities yesterday and their different plans and ideas, and you were saying just living in the world of sanya. Anything more to add about this?
Yeah. Any moment citta arises, one lives in the world of sanya. See, Kun Betty, Sanya.
So anytime.
Any moment. Unknown.
This morning it sounded like because we're not used to thinking about realities, we automatically think in terms of people and things and refer, when we communicate with anyone, when we talk, our conversations is always about us and them and situations, places and things. And that's definitely because of Sanya. So I thought that was what you were pointing out as the distinction. We live in the world of Sanya as in, and we've accumulated so much attachment to different ideas.
So that's the reason why we should remind oneself or the others about Sanya, because the Sanya is the khanda too, and of the five khandas should be understood as not self.
Just a question. For the different sense doors, can Sanya be more capable at one particular sense door? For example, for the dog, the smelling, it seems we talk about shape and form and the detail. Then for their eyes, even when Hei see Nana and me from a little bit distance, from seeing, it seems she does not know who is who. And then because on the smelling,
yeah,
based on the detail of the memory, she could know, oh, that's Nana, that's me. So the question, can we say Sanya could be more capable in one of the sense door?
It depends on conditions, because yeah, if you don't think about cat or dog or human being, Sanya is Sanya.
Yes, yes.
That's all.
I was just going to say, anyway, is it Sanya being more capable, or is it the tendencies, the interest and the skills accumulated through the doorways that differ?
If you have bad eyesight and you find a way to experience things through the ear and try to make things out through what's heard more, or to the body, then it's automatically you start thinking about these things more. So it just becomes a habit of, if I'm in this room and my eyesight is bad, then I'm paying attention to the sound more. So, but the Sanya itself is just marking. It's not strong or weak.
In terms of just shape and form or the detail, like level of skills.
It's just exactly the same through any sense doorway, the attending to the shape and form. So maybe for Hei, more attending to the shape and form of what is smelt. But just by conditions, maybe for another dog, not so much. So it just depends. But actually just dharmas. It's not like one Sanya is stronger or anything, but just depends on what is marked and remembered and attended to, and what there are conditions for thinking about, even not in words, like in Hei's case, just thinking about what is smelt, but now maybe no attending to what is smelt, maybe attending to some other object. So it just depends each moment on conditions, no matter we call it animal or human or anything.
Maybe there are more conditions for smell to be the object repeatedly for Hei than for human beings, for example.
What about butterfly? How many khandas?
Five.
We talk a little bit about the 10 akusala kamabata, and that's one point I would like to clarify further, because I just checked this morning on the 10, and one of them is the frivolous talk. So in what case it can become kamabata?
When it hurts or harms.
Mm-hmm. only when it hurts or harms.
Like Lopa now.
By, for example, saying, but it's not the intention to harm.
Yes, and you speak that way, see, just in order to harm, intention to harm.
Okay.
Like when speaking to your friend about the other friend, intending to harm the reputation of the other friend.
But that would not be like divisive speech. That would be another kind of kamapata.
By different means, because someone might sing a song, harming the others, poetry, in different ways.
But if that's not the intention...
With intention.
If there is the intention.
But because for me, when if there's the intention to harm, it will become one of the other three.
By what way?
Like saying something not true or
wrong
saying...
Wrong speech?
Yeah.
Or what?
By saying something not true or saying something that might divide or separate the others or saying something's harsh. That.
What about just making fun of someone?
That would be to harm others?
That's, yeah, it's not under any of those other categories, though, is it?
Sometimes making fun of someone, not really to harm, but it's more like to make fun.
Yeah, but
it's not under any of the other three categories. Because it's not divisive,
mm-hmm.
and it's not hard, and it needn't be
hard. Hard speech.
What about if it's making fun of someone in order to show up their bad qualities or the fact that they're clumsy or something like this, and it may be very mild, but there can be actually some intention to hurt at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Can be. It depends on the chetana.
Just now, Ajahn talked about speaking in verse, and sometimes you're not direct. You don't direct, but you say it in a way that will make the other person think. You're not saying, go harm him. You're not directly saying to that person, you're this, you're that. But maybe to a third person, you're indirectly making him feel ashamed in front of that person, using different words.
And that would not fall under hard speech?
Beautiful word.
Yeah, you can
different
use words, nice words,
yeah.
Nice tone, very alluring speech.
Mm.
What about teasing? What about, sarcastic speak, teasing someone about their boyfriend, for example, about, what a funny boyfriend they have or something, or... Any metta at that moment?
No metta.
No metta, so can be intent.
Motivated by jealousy.
Huh? Or just maybe trying to put down that person, intending to harm them in some way.
But I still think there's a difference when you try to put down someone seriously, when you just make fun. Like.
More than that.
More than that?
Sometimes you can boldly say to that person things you have in mind. Sometimes you don't have the courage to say, so you say it indirectly.
Mm. Okay. So when we make fun of someone, usually we take into the account the fact that this degree of making fun will not make that person upset. If you know that that will make the person upset, you will not.
Right.
Do
sometimes
it.
It's done because one knows the person well, basically rooted in attachment.
Mm.
But other times it can be done with dosa. That's the kind of harmful kind. We don't say all making fun is kamapata.
Okay.
Or it can be with attachment, like we were talking about yesterday about the fifth precept and how it can lead to harmful speech, like one may... And even worse, one may just say something like a kind of almost a showing off, which actually puts down the other person and causes them harm or embarrassment. And there is the intention that they will be embarrassed at that time. Mm-hmm. So there is causing harm, mm-hmm. having fun and intentionally causing them embarrassment in front of other people, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. You're faced with a situation where someone does something which he claims to, or not claims, or which he has the intention to really do for your benefit and your friend's benefit, but you suspect that he probably has something to gain. Maybe he's getting commission for something. So instead of saying that, hey, you also got something, you say, you know, everyone does like this, you know, in this situation, so why should he not do it? Something like that.
Okay, more clear?
So perhaps frivolous speech we could think of as any harmful speech not covered by the other categories.
Okay.
I mean, usually frivolous speech, you can come down to something that you don't even necessarily say. Mm. Right, like talks that are not important. When you want to directly harm somebody, you say it with, clearly there's an intent, and you know you want that. But frivolous speech is something you didn't need to have to say, but you said it, mm. you know, because you want to have some result.
I think having fun and intentionally embarrassing someone, that would be
intention to harm, yeah, when it doesn't fall under the other three.
But like intending to put down or embarrass mm. or just cause someone harm at that time. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Kaya Vinyati and Vachi Vinyati yesterday, and Nina was very surprised when we said that even when making a deliberate movement, for example, even when no one else is around and there's no intention to convey a meaning as such to others, but like when walking deliberately or swimming or lifting one's handbag, that Kaya Vinyati is there.
Or even now when you talk and I do like this, it's Kaya Vinyati, because I agree it's good to discuss it, so I do like this already. But even when no people around and I don't convey a meaning, it's still Kaya Vinyati, and at that point I find it a bit difficult. So when I even move all the time, all day, or I move my arm, or each second, so to say, there is already Kaya Vinyati, and I found that a bit difficult to understand.
Do you mean that any time, all the time?
All the time when I'm moving.
No, yeah. It cannot be all the time.
It cannot be all the time.
Only when there's idea or something.
The idea of something.
That you do that.
But the idea of something, I don't understand that quite.
Doing something. Idea of doing something.
Yeah. Like when swimming, when one's deliberately putting one's hand into the water.
Yes.
It's the attending to it, the deliberately doing something. That is Kaya Vinyati.
So deliberately,
if one's just walking normally, it's not Kaya Vinyati. But if one's particularly striding along and paying attention to one's footsteps and arms in the way of walking, then it's Kaya Vinyati. So it's not all the time.
So when I walk with the walker, and I have to be careful to take my balance, not to fall down, or each step.
Must be there.
And is that Kaya Vinyati?
Must be there.
So it's a bit difficult to understand.
I mean, especially if you're walking in the rain on slippery tiles, you have to think a lot about the walking.
Yeah, so when you think about it, difficult to understand.
So when with your walker, you're taking care of each step and each movement with the walker, and then you get to the lift and you're having to go in a particular way.
Yeah.
Kaya Vinyati is there and is the doorway for the other rupas conditioned by the citta.
Yes. So when I'm training with my teacher and doing exercises with her, there's Kaya Vinyati. Yes. But do I convey a meaning?
Is in your mind? Only.
In my mind.
Your mind.
Yes.
You know by yourself.
Yeah.
Who can know?
I mean, you want to be sure that what you're doing is right, according to what your teacher instructed.
Yes.
Right? So to yourself, you're thinking all the time that this is the way to do it. This is the way yes. the teacher has taught me to do it.
Yes. So, Hang is doing the walk in the park. So we were mentioning that yesterday. She's walking in the park. When is Kaya Vinyati?
I remember when I passed by the wet floor, so I have to take care for on the feet. So I think it's that time is Kaya Vinyati. And for normally walking movement, I don't think it's Kaya Vinyati.
Can you repeat it a bit?
She's saying that when it's just normal walking in the park, nothing special about the walking, but just normal walking, then it's not Kaya Vinyati. But when she has to specially attend to some area like walking on the cobblestones or on the uneven pavement or something, then...
So in my case, it's very often Kaya Vinyati,
yes. Yes. With every step, every movement.
So, but now when I'm laughing, also fish is moving. Kaya Vinyati?
Not necessarily at all, because it's not like deliberately moving the face to laugh, but just a natural response. But if there's deliberately laughing or deliberately smiling, then Kaya Vinyati.
But you know when you laugh or smile.
Excuse me?
You know yourself when you laugh and smile. What is there?
No, I'm not always sure, no.
You don't know? While you laugh?
Yeah.
I think that you enjoy something very much.
Yes, I'm enjoying
right now,
it now.
Right now. Oh. So can that be Kaya Vinyati?
I don't know. I haven't quite understood yet.
Well, as Tam was saying, when somebody asks you to smile for a photo... So you promptly smile.
Obvious example. Right. Take off the glasses and smile.
Although, once you smile, you may be happy and just smiling because of that happiness.
Yes.
So it's different moments.
Or I smile because I think I shouldn't have a sour face. It's so unpleasant for other people. It's so unpleasant for other people. So...
What about when you're taking a selfie photo?
No, I'm not so interested in that.
Someone's just taking a photo of you, like yesterday when you asked someone to take a photo of you.
Yeah.
But still, it's whether it's for others or yourself, still Kaya Vinyati.
Kaya Vinyati. So it doesn't have to do much about conveying a meaning, because that's usually to others conveying a meaning. Right?
Or to yourself.
Even to yourself.
To yourself.
Yeah.
Difficult.
In what sense are you conveying a meaning to yourself?
You're practicing some pose.
How's that conveying a meaning to oneself?
Yeah, it needs to be like this.
This is the problem is with the English words, I think, yes.
I think it's, it's conveying.
Yes.
In any sense.
What about when you think?
Can you repeat it, please, Sarah?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that we translate it as convey a meaning, but in English we don't think of that as when deliberately smiling for a photo, we don't think of that as conveying a meaning. So it's like, it's just a translation.
A translation.
It's a slightly confusing translation.
Yeah,
it's
confusing, yeah.
But what about when you know that smiling first is pleasant, look. And then, by then, at that moment, there's pleasant smiling first.
I think in that instance, actually, I would consider that conveying a meaning because you're putting on a face.
Mm-hmm.
But other instances, like the swimming technique, getting it right, or your way of walking being in accordance with your teacher, Those instances, I think, are the ones that are difficult to think of in terms of conveying a meaning.
We know it's
easy, but it is Gaya Vinyati.
Yes.
Only that the word, like Sarah saying, is the English one is confusing. Yeah.
We could say that Kaya Vinyati is when it's like deliberate, purposeful bodily movement would be a little more accurate. Yeah, purposeful movement.
But now I'm moving the body, but nothing special.
Who knows?
When it's nothing special, it's not Kaya Vinyati, but when it's something special, yes, it's Kaya Vinyati.
Moving not to avoid, not to be hurt.
Yes. Like sitting up,
getting stiff or something.
Yes. Then that is Kaya Vinyati.
This?
Yes.
Oh.
So is it really that, suppose I'm feeling uncomfortable and I do like, is this Kaya Vinyati?
Is it?
Is it purposeful?
Purposeful in the sense that to
yes.
So it is Kaya Vinyati.
Kaya Vinyati.
Yes.
It's normal, that's all.
Difficult.
And the other thing we were discussing was because Kaya Vinyati and Vajji Vinyati are asabhava rupas that don't appear and can't be known and don't have a characteristic that can be experienced. So actually there are two questions. So Tom had a question, what about when it's highly developed understanding? We know that for those with highly developed understanding, even the asabhava rupa can be known. The Buddha had no problem knowing the asabhava rupa, or those who had developed patisambhadas or had highly developed understanding. So the first question was, how can it be known if there isn't a characteristic appears even to highly developed understanding?
That's why it's not just words. It has to be right understanding. If it's not there, there is thinking about it. But when it's there, you don't have to think about it.
So, Han called out to me. She said, it's not yours. Yesterday, about Kaya Vinyati. You said to me, it's not yours.
It's just a Dharma, just a reality, yes. And the other point that I'm interested in is because we know it's the doorway or the means for all the rupas and what we see, like when someone is gesticulating, like now, for example, actually isn't Kaya Vinyati. I mean, what's seen is visible object, and so many rupas are involved, like motion, and so many other rupas are involved in what is taken to be a waving finger, for example. But without Kaya Vinyati, then those rupas wouldn't appear or wouldn't occur. But it's a little bit difficult because the Kaya Vinyati doesn't appear, but we know when there is that movement, Kaya Vinyati has to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
So the way that the citta conditions the Kaya Vinyati and all those other rupas, like the vikara rupas involved in the movement, I think we can just say there are so many different groups of rupas arising at different moments, conditioned by citta, including Kaya Vinyati. Is that all?
So when I move like this more closely to hear better what you are saying, like this, Kaya Vinyati, I'm not sure, really. Doubt.
Doubt.
Yeah.
When we think about knowing, when we are talking about knowing Kaya Vinyati, that some with highly developed panya can know, are we really talking about Kaya Vinyati being the object of
citta? At the moment when citta experiences is the object.
So there are some rupas that can never be the object except through thinking, such as the water element. But I can understand even intellectually that if there's understanding of rupa, of the other Mahabhuta rupas, then there can be understanding of the water element, even though it's never experienced. So when we say knowing, as in Panya knowing, we don't always mean directly knowing.
Directly, through what are we?
But,
mind-o.
Through mind-o, okay.
It's easier to understand with water element because the characteristic, it's a sabhava rupa that can appear through mind-o, so it has a characteristic that can be known by developed understanding. But Tam's question was if it's an asabhava rupa, such as femininity or akasa or kaya vinyati, if it's an asabhava rupa, there's no characteristic that can appear even to highly developed understanding. So how would the asabhava rupa be known?
It depends. For example, what are they, one by one?
Okay, 10 asabhava rupas.
Which one?
So akasa.
Akasa in between groups. See? So when the experiencing of rupa is there, as Vipassana Jnana, it's there.
Right.
Many groups.
It's clear there has to be the space in between and it can be known, but it depends on the understanding of the groups of rupa, otherwise it can't be known.
From what Ajahn Singh and Sarah Singh, it seems like there is understanding of different dhammas and groups. Groups as in many, many dhammas, so each one is understood. And hence, the akasa is also understood. Or are you saying that the akasa is also, can also be the object of understanding?
Because at this moment, when one experiences an object, it seems like there is only one object, but actually many groups of rupa.
Right, so we understand that there are many groups of rupa
when Panya is developed.
Yeah. But because of understanding different rupas...
When it's there and Panya, which experiences, there's no doubt about the group and the kalapas.
So when we understand that there is a group, means there are many kalapas, and in between there must be space, is that the kind of understanding?
At that moment, it has to be. Experience space as well.
It has to experience space,
yeah, because
as well.
Space is between kalapas.
So actually understanding groups is understanding space because they have to be separated.
That's true inference, right? That seems to be true inference. But my question was, is the space the object of the citta?
Because many kalapas at moment of touching appears as they are.
Including space?
Yes, because when you talk about
kalapas, we're not talking about individual rupas.
For example, hardness, how many kalapas at this moment of touching?
Right.
And when it's there, groups, different one, akasa is in between.
Still, it seems like we're...
Because when it's clear understanding, like vipassana, yeah, it's not like the world we used to think about or we live. It's a different world. The world of fully understanding stage by stage of what is heard.
Like now, if we talk about understanding groups of rupa, it's just thinking and wondering and how is it possible. But when it is the Samasana Jnana, it is the direct understanding of group. It's not like now just thinking about the idea of kalapas, and the same with akasa.
So it's not like satipatthana, but much higher.
It is satipatthana.
It has to be satipatthana all the way,
even Lokuttara citta.
But if it is satipatthana, we know that the object is a characteristic of nama or rupa. So the kalapa
is... Not the word, but the characteristic, which is as sure to directly discern the true nature of just that which appears as different kalapas.
But kalapa is not one rupa. So when we talk about satipatthana, it is knowing one characteristic of rupa.
Nimitta.
Nimitta. Many, but the same rupa we're talking about. So, but kalapa is not one rupa, one kind of rupa.
What do you mean?
When we talk about Kalapa, we're talking about many rupas that arise together.
Yes, it depends on what kind appears. The Kalapa of hardness is appearance, or the Kalapa of what is experience?
When we say the Kalapa of hardness, we're talking about hardness as characteristic, and Kalapa, right. that this and hardness must arise with other...
Yeah, the many groups of hardness, right, at moment of touching.
Mm-hmm. Many Kalapas, therefore.
And what's there in between Kalapa?
Space.
So that is experienced. When the many Kalapas are experienced.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so it's
hard to know, because we think only by thinking, but it's not thinking then. It's
direct. No, because it's clear understanding.
Yeah, yeah. But now we cannot imagine it now at all.
But the understanding begins to develop, like when we first heard about visible object. We didn't appreciate that it had to arise with other rupas and is conditioned by them, but now that seems obvious because there's been the hearing and considering and getting used to the truth about that reality, that the visible object is conditioned by those other rupas it arises together with, and the group of rupas with eye sense has to be different from the group of rupas with hardness here, for example. So the understanding develops.
Yes, yes, like you stressed many times that the each visible object is really different because of the other elements that arise together with it. It's make it so different. So that is a way of understanding better.
And it shows how conditioned it is and how anatta it is, because no one could decide what visible object is seen now.
Yeah.
And each one is different and rises and falls away.
Yeah.
And the next one was, so we're talking about the asabhava rupas and how they are known. So then the next kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati. So now we understand more about what kaya vinyati is, that it's the asabhava rupa. It's not that which is taken for movement or posture or anything like that. It's just a very subtle rupa that isn't evident but has to be there when there's the purposeful movement or speech like now. And in terms of how the reality is known, even though there isn't a characteristic. Would you say more, Ajahn?
The result is different, because now when we speak, it's not when we just move.
Yes.
I cannot get it very well, sir. Could you repeat it, please?
The result is different when speaking now. It's different from when moving, because when speaking, Vachi Vinyati is the doorway and the means by which the words convey a meaning right now, whereas when moving the hand purposefully, the Kaya Vinyati is there as the means or the doorway for that meaning to be conveyed, that's all.
It's easier when it is a Vachi Vinyati. It's easier about conveying a meaning when it is Vachi Vinyati is easier than Kaya Vinyati. Because when speaking, it's understandable there's conveying a meaning.
What about when one's just on one's own, singing in the shower, or
speaking to oneself?
Speaking to oneself, exactly. Speaking to the flowers in one's house, or deliberately laughing or something, or deliberately yawning, then it's just the same.
Learning a language,
just the same.
I don't see it as the same, but...
Now.
There is sound.
There is sound.
Voice. How come without a Vachi Vinyati?
No, there has to be Vachi Vinyati, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking. I convey meaning to you.
Or any word.
Yeah.
even she cannot understand.
Well, in another language, Dutch language also. Yeah.
Like sometimes we get in the lift and we say something to someone else in the lift here and they don't understand what we say, or they speak to us and we don't understand what they say, but still it's Facci Vignetti. And then I'm not going through the correct order, I'm mixing it up. The four characteristics of Rupa, the Upachaya, the Santati, the Jarati, and the Abjata, and the Anicchata, or the other way round, the characteristics of Rupa. And then it's a little bit like Akasa. It's easy to understand that if there is not the direct understanding of visible object, of course there cannot be the understanding of moments of the Rupa. But so it's easier to understand that when it's highly developed understanding, it can not only understand the visible object, but the arising and falling away of visible object.
Or any object.
Or any object, any rupa.
So does that mean that not only the Buddha or the very great disciples, but any enlightened being has known about all these asabhava rupas?
By conditions only.
Okay. That means that it might be that akasa
whatever
is not
by conditions.
Known.
And actually it's the same answer for any others. It's by conditions.
The conclusion is that if it is real and it exists, it can be known by Dolapandya.
Yeah. If it couldn't be known, the Buddha couldn't have taught about it. So it just depends what understanding one is talking about. Just because it can't be known by our limited understanding doesn't mean it can't be known.
When you talk about the asapava rupa, you see that it's 1, 2, 3, and 4. One, you mentioned about a paricheta rupa or akasa rupa.
Yes.
Two, you mentioned about a gaya vinyati.
Yes.
And vinyana vinyati.
Yes.
You forgot the three, vikara rupa. The point, the topic, yeah, it's like gaya vinyati with vikara rupa.
I didn't forget. I said that I was changing the order around. I said I was talking next about the four characteristics of rupa because we mentioned this yesterday. So it wasn't, I just said I was changing the order around. And then at the end, we said, okay, it's the same with all of them. So what we just said is exactly the same with the three vikara rupas. Exactly the same point applies, that they can be understood by the highly developed understanding directly. So this is why no need to mention any more, because the point is exactly the same.
Like an example that you can talk about Gaya Vinyati with Vikara Rupa is different. That the degree of Gaya Vinyati is like a gymnastic or like a what, dancing or something like that. Or even the Virji Vinyati with a Vikara Rupa.
We actually discussed this point yesterday. We discussed how there are different groups of kalapas conditioned by citta, and how there can just be the kalapa of eight rupas conditioned by citta without any vikara rupas and without kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati, and then there can be the group with kaya vinyati, and there can be the group with vachi vinyati and sound, and there can be the group with kaya vinyati and the three vikara rupas, and there can be the group with vachi vinyati and sound and the vikara rupas. So we discussed a little bit about this just to indicate that these are just different groups of rupas conditioned by citta, and the vikara rupas for other people are like if there's no kaya vinyati or vachi vinyati, but there is just like a movement in sleep or
sneezing or sudden coughing, but no intention to convey a meaning, or when one's just walking along, but no intention to convey a meaning, there have to be the three vikara rupas, the wieldiness, plasticity, I can never remember the terms in English, otherwise there couldn't be that kind of movement. And now, like Nina indicating how she would like tea in her cup, there's a kaya vinyati, and there have to be the vikara rupas together with that kaya vinyati. And we also talked yesterday about how the kaya vinyati and the vachi vinyati only lasts for one chitta, for one moment, and falls away, but these other vikara rupas or the other rupas that were in that same kalapa have to last for 17 moments. But now the topic was just about how the various asabhava rupas can be known, and I think we covered that topic by just explaining how the developed understanding. But anyway, good to point out about vikara rupas. Lahuta, yeah, mudita and kamanyata. It's good to point out, sometimes we have to consider the audience, because like the other day when you rightly pointed out after the discussion that when talking about 89 chittas, just to say there's birth and death and other chittas in between isn't adequate and not strictly correct, because the birth and the death is the same kind of chitta. But if we're talking to a beginner, then we're just explaining that there are many different chittas in life. No need to go into the details, because like this, I'm sure Chong and Lek can't follow that amount of details. So we have to consider what is most helpful for the listener.
But even so-called long-time listeners, we often forget that the point is to understand the reality now. And the purpose of studying all these details is that to understand that there is no self. So any detail, any reality you can talk about with right understanding and needs to be understood by the listener as just being a reality.
Like Nina said, if it's not about now and what can be known now, then it can just be book study and not helpful. So yeah, it always has to come back to this moment and yeah, what appears now.
Yeah, I was just thinking about something. When people come to Ajahn with problems in life, with relatives and so on in their work, and there are lots of stories. We all have them, we are absorbed in stories. And then very often I noticed Ajahn would say, is the seeing now to bring people back to the present moment? So that is a good way that they consider more seeing now, because like the Buddha talked about seeing all the time, to consider what is appearing, because seeing there is very often seeing. Is that right? Don't you talk about seeing quite a lot?
Because it's now.
That's what I was thinking about. Because I get also people come to me and they have problems, and I think, oh, how shall I answer this one? It's so delicate, even delicate problems. I wouldn't like to touch on it directly. So I would rather talk about seeing now. It's sometimes so delicate. And
but it also depends who one's speaking to. Like the example I gave when you used to talk a lot about the problems you had with your father, and how I remembered Ajahn just mentioned, is the seeing now. Because she knew you could appreciate it, like bring back to the present moment. Mm-hmm. But if someone doesn't know anything about Dharma and they are talking about their difficulty, then sometimes it's not appropriate. So it depends on who one's talking to and whether there's any understanding. Yeah. If they've never heard anything about seeing invisible object, just to say, oh, what about seeing now?
No, we have to explain a bit, about the six doors and the different objects for the six doors.
I think to generalize, one can talk about what is appearing at the present moment, any present moment reality.
But there would not present moment, what is it, what is
well,
it?
That's the point. What is real at the present moment?
So yesterday, too, we discussed a bit about the present moment and the difficulties one may have about what is present. It seems like thinking, but it's still level of pariyati, not yet patipati. So then there is not yet present moment.
Well, it may not be either pariyati or paripati, so...
Yeah, maybe attachment.
It could be
maybe
anything.
Yeah.
But we talked about the idea of trying to find out whether it was one or the other as being not part of the development of the path.
That's right.
Takes one away from the present moment.
Because we discussed yesterday, when we think about it, already it's gone already,
But Nina, even pariyati is about the present moment, right? Even pariyati is about the present moment. So when it arises, that's something to appreciate.
But not present, not really so direct.
Even that is so hard to arise in a day. Mm-hmm. And when you realize that it's only pariyati and not patipati, that's pandya. And what more you need?
Yeah. Some degree already, but weak pandya.
The point is, why is one anxious to find out or so keen to work out what level or what kind of understanding, what is there? It's not pariyati at that moment.
But people like to
never mind
know.
About people, but what about now? If one would like to know what kind of level or what kind of understanding it is, actually at this moment it's just thinking and attachment and doubt and... And so understanding what appears right now is more important than trying to work out anything.
Oh, that's right. But I'm thinking of questions one gets from people to explain about the present moments, you see.
But usually newcomers don't come and say, I want to work out whether I have pariyati or patipati.
I don't want to work it out,
no.
But people ask questions about the present moment.
So one can talk about what appears now, about what is real, what is life at this moment.
Yeah.
And if it's doubt or thinking, that's also real.
Yes, that's true. Very good, yeah.
And Ajahn, yesterday, Chong, the last couple of days, he's asked one or two questions, so I think it's useful to have your comments also. One question was about... If someone follows their meditation practice and one knows it's not the right way, but whether one should just tell them it's not right, if they don't really understand much about dharmas, or whether better to just start talking about realities. And another one was if someone has the idea they shouldn't watch television, and whether that is right. And a third one is if one doesn't want to, well, maybe those two first. So first of all, the one who meditates, whether one should just tell them it's wrong or try to talk more about realities. And the second one, the one who thinks they shouldn't watch television, how to help them.
Can you believe me if I tell you something?
Maybe yes.
I think that the best way to have people understand what we'd like them to understand, like the understanding, is just asking them. Keep on asking. For example, if you are that person who is interested in meditation and meditates, we better ask, what is meditation? Because we just would like to understand. And if they know about it, we can ask more and more and more. For example, what is meditation? Suppose you are your friend. And asking that person, what is meditation? What would he say? So we can continue on
So just imagine you are your father. So you are your father, and you say to him, what is meditation? What is your answer?
Because you cannot help the person who doesn't want to listen at all. But if that person is interested in thinking about what you are saying, then he would like to know what's in your mind.
Yes, but my point is I'm not my father and I cannot tell him what to do. But you know that he used to come to the discussion many times and we talk a lot about meditation. And he just said that, yeah, he will stop meditation just to... he doesn't have to answer anymore and he's still doing the meditation at home.
That's why
I think that maybe if he still want to do the meditation, so better let him do whatever he want. Maybe he
it's can. Only something he likes, that's all.
Yes,
he doesn't want to understand anything. He just want to do just what he likes.
Yes, so I think that maybe better that let him understand by his own.
You cannot change the accumulation of the others at all.
Yes.
If that person has no interest in understanding, it's impossible what would you try to help.
Yes.
But any time he'd like to be interested in understanding, then it's time to ask or to talk about that.
Yes.
So there is no answer or single correct approach here. It's a question of knowing what is the right thing to say at the right time. One needs to know both the right time and then the right thing to say, and it's very difficult, especially where it's someone like in this case who has heard a lot already and basically rejects it. But getting back to the original question, telling that person to stop is not really at all helpful because it doesn't help the understanding. So yes. I would agree, if you can't think of something useful and helpful to say, then don't say anything.
When you want someone to stop meditating, what is the citta at that time? Right. If it's panya, then you know that it's not about telling someone to stop. The same way that you understood, what you understood is through hearing. So that's what you do, share the Dhamma. And only through his own concentration can he see the fault in meditation.
So back to Kunsichin's point, because I think this is helpful not just for this case, for many, because this is, Mr. Zhao brought up the same thing about his friends who meditate and helping them last time. So her question to you was, if you are your father or your friend who meditates, and she says to this person, what is meditation? How will they reply? So please, you are your father or the friend, what is meditation? What will you say?
Yes, but I don't know how to answer because I don't know much about the meditation.
I think when we ask him that question, he answers like, you know, in all the discussions we have said, he said, it's bhavana, it's the development of understanding.
Even so, after the answer, who knows the different thinking? The person who'd like to understand is so very interested to know whether the answer is right or wrong, but the person who doesn't have interest in understanding, never mind what one says.
It's not about winning the argument. It's about helping the understanding. And if there's because barrier to that, then what
because
can
he's
you
been
do?
To almost all the discussions.
And like, why just one's father? What about the others who have wrong understanding and who can understand what is right and what is wrong?
Yes.
And the second example Chong mentioned was the person who appreciates that there shouldn't be any following of a practice like meditation and they're interested to understand more about Dharma, but they may think that it's
frivolous or waste of time to watch TV or go to the movie or take photos. This was the other idea.
Even you are not interested in these things, you are interested in something. Exactly the same, more or less. So it's not just one people to do this or that. What about the understanding, which is the condition to do the right thing?
That's what most people forget, that it's the function of Pandya, not the self, who can stop anything, any akusala to rise.
I think the question relates to a third person, not Chong himself, so he's wondering how to respond when someone tells him.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what is the answer. If that person is interested in television, the other is interested in other things, the same thing, playing golf or whatever.
In other words, the answer could be attachment is attachment, whether it's watching television or eating food or whatever. It's just attachment, different objects.
And this is what we said yesterday. Maybe one may not have any interest in watching TV, that's one thing. But if one would really like to watch it but has the idea one shouldn't, it's different. Or if one has no interest in taking a photo, that's one thing. But if one thinks one shouldn't take the photo because of attachment, this is not understanding conditioned reality at that moment, because it's the idea of setting a rule. And no one, yes, or if one thinks one shouldn't eat any tasty food, or, yes, shouldn't play golf, it's the same. So one thing is not really being that interested in food or not having any interest in golf. Another thing is thinking one shouldn't because one's trying to avoid attachment. Actually, it's the clinging to self is there at that time very strongly.
Also, there's a problem of mana. I don't do it, so I'm not attached. So we forget that, you're not attached to that, but there are other things that you're attached. But you're focused on that thing, I'm not attached, he's attached, therefore I'm better. So we judge other people, we don't even have the intention of helping someone else, but rather to make ourselves feel that we are good and they're not good.
Any comment,
John? What is the object that everyone is so attached more than golf or television in a day? Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, feeling, remembering. See, everything. That's why it's not just on the television or golf. Even the Sotapanna, does she and he would like to do this and that?
Play golf.
Play golf, television.
Anytime.
Was Sariputta so concerned about his mother that she had wrong view? I mean, he understood.
And the other topic that Chong mentioned related to politics, for example, one's friends may be very interested in a political cause, like helping to change the politics to protect the farmers or something like this, or improve the environment, for example. And so they would like to encourage everyone to join the cause, to sign the petition or help them. And so they might try to put pressure on someone like Chong, he mentioned himself in this way, to put something on Facebook or to join the cause, and one may not have any interest. It may not be one's way of helping others. One may not be inclined to do so. Or again, one may be interested but not think it is appropriate. Anything you would like to say about this?
No.
Yes, I think that if anyone want to cite a competition or want to share something on the social network, they just do it. It's not wrong or right, but for me, it's just inappropriate for me. That's all.
That's why I just now mentioned about mana. We do end up, especially when we're talking about things such as social activism, we do end up mistaking what we, our own accumulations, what we like to do as being good and right, and want others also to also be the same as us. But actually, when we hear the Dhamma, we know the danger of attachment. We do things with attachment and ignorance.
Comment to Jan, because he would, when he feels for himself it's not appropriate, and when people like family members put pressure, it can seem some issue or problem.
Let's talk about Jess himself.
Yes.
Would you like Jess to do what you like for yourself, and whatever you can do for the others, would you like to do too?
Sorry.
Just for you, whatever you'd like to do is just for you, for your sake. Or whatever you can do for the others, you'd like to do too, for the sake of the others.
To have the right understanding.
Ajahn's question is, do you want to do just what you want to do, or do you also want to consider other people in what you do?
Or when you want to do something just for yourself, or also for the others, when it's something that you can do for the others in a day.
Sometimes it's for myself and sometimes for others.
Like if I move a little bit away for the sake of Kunina, see, is that should be, or things better to do, or just don't mind about the others at all?
Better to do.
Just mind about yourself, or wanting to do something just for your own self, not for the others at all?
No, for the others.
Think of others also.
So there are so many ways to help and to think and to do for the others. As much as you can do, better than just not doing anything at all.
Sometimes we do things that we wouldn't otherwise do, but we do it out of consideration for the other person. But
yes,
that doesn't mean that we always have to comply with other people's expectations, because people have different expectations, some reasonable, some unreasonable, some we are happy to comply with or to take into consideration, and others it's not possible, because, as Ajahn said, we do the best we can, but that doesn't mean that we can always have kusala citta or always do what other people expect from us.
Yes, but sometimes I want to do for other people, but I'm not sure that that's the right thing to do, because maybe it's my right thing, but it's not just their right
thing. So consider carefully.
Yes.
And do what's best.
So there's no specific answer. We all face a similar situation during the day from time to time. Anyone in a relationship has that kind of decision to make multiple times a day.
Yes, but for the example, if I share something on my Facebook, maybe it wouldn't help other people, but maybe it doesn't help the other, because
but you consider before doing so. Whether it's proper or not, wholesome or not, beneficial or not, before doing anything, to be careful. And when it's wholesome, it will bring the wholesome result.
Okay, I see.
In other words, there's no right answer. It's not a matter of you should sign the petition or you shouldn't, but one just considers carefully what is beneficial to others, what is considerate to others, what is kusala at that moment. No matter one signs or doesn't sign, one just considers what is the right way and considers the needs of others.
Yes, I understand that.
So sometimes you might sign it and other times you might not, depending on all different sorts of factors.
Even you don't sign anything, but you can do many things.
Yes.
But the Jesus, you consider for others, people's welfare, not just for oneself, right?
And one may not want to sign it or do it in this way, but one may help in some other way. Everyone has their own way. Actually, the comment about do your best just reminded me. Yesterday, I received an email from Gabby. Recently, her sister died, and she was in hospital for the last 8 or 10 weeks, and Gabby was with her all the time, and she found it so helpful. She was listening to a lot of our edited audio recordings, like from our trip in January when my mother was dying and I was talking about the Jataka of everyone dying and the broken pots, and she listened many times and found the reminders very helpful. And she said she often thought about Ajahn's comment, just do your best. And she was asking me what exactly was meant by do your best. Have as much kusala and understanding as possible, or anything else that you would like to mention?
Yeah. Not only think about particular moment, anytime.
Yes. We do our best anytime.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the best is understanding.
It depends on situation.
But even then, any situation, the best is understanding. Mm-hmm. You can't stop the accumulations to do other what might follow, or but the best is always understanding, and understanding is the leader of all kusala.
And there are not just only panya, there are 10 paramis.
So do your best, but no expectation, without expectation. So if people
because it's not you, it's only citta, cittasika, rupa.
It is only
citta.
Yeah.
Cittasika
and rupa. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Say, for example, people, we were talking about if I want to watch a TV, if the idea of I should not, that's the not good.
One forgets that it's not you at all. It depends on condition.
Yes.
Each move, each moment.
Right. So, I mean, do your best. Say, another example, if there's going to say a harsh word, and then there's the thoughts come up, I should not say a harsh word. I should control the anger. So in that situation, what is the better?
You think that you control.
Is that worse, or is that the...
But actually, it's not you.
Right.
It's moment which is accumulated to arise and think like that.
Can be kusala or agusala, or more likely a mixture of both.
Or both akusala. One is even worse with ditti. I can control, I can manage. The other one is purely dosa.
As long as there is no conditions to understand reality as it is, there can be conditions for thinking a lot.
Thinking that one will not or should not speak the harsh word at that moment and refraining from it is one thing, and then thinking that there is the ability to control is quite a different thought, isn't it? So there could be the restraint without necessarily thinking about exercising control.
Yes, but for most people who have not heard Dharma or considered it carefully, most of the time it's the idea I should manage, I should control my anger.
So I think that it depends on the individual. For example, if you ask the person, can you control? Because we can think sometimes that I wouldn't do this or that, but when time comes, It happens by conditions.
But even for people who haven't heard the Dhamma, I don't think we can say most of them would have the idea of I should control my anger. They may think of the other person and think, no, hang on, it's not appreciated. There can be different ideas.
Everyone has different accumulations and different ways of dealing with different situations. And I think in the suttas also they talk about different sorts of actions that might occur to different people, such as reminding oneself, biting the tongue, and all sorts of things to restrain from certain actions. But that's according to accumulations. What I think is important is to understand that it's just dhammas, and understanding is the key, because whatever accumulations, we do it, even you don't change before and after hearing dhamma in your basic nature, right? How you deal with different situations is still basically the same. But the only difference is that before hearing the dhamma, it used to be me, I, who do. Now you would do the same thing. You don't expect to change, but you slowly begin to understand that there's not you, but just dhammas arising and falling.
Right, yeah, it's all come down to by conditions. Yeah, just for example, if angry mala have the thought, I should not kill, then, okay, this is a story, then he would not have the Buddha's help. But that's just a story.
The anger at that time, for example, it's conditioned as dhamma, it's not self, but the understanding begins to understand the harmfulness and how there's no metta, no kindness at all at that time, and how the problem isn't whatever anyone else or anything that's happened, but it's the strong attachment to oneself, to having things the way one would like it, that leads to the expectation. And without that strong attachment and expectation, that wouldn't be the strong dosa when it's not how one would like it. So understanding begins to work its way. Would one really like to help one's friends and family matters? Because if one would genuinely like to help and be friendly, then one really begins to understand the benefit of metta and the damage that the dosa can bring. So understanding begins to have its way. And sometimes, like conventionally, we would say, oh, bite your tongue or move away. Actually, we know each movement is conditioned, but still one considering what is helpful. Actually, whether one walks away or not is conditioned, but just considering the benefit of restraint at that time, like the biting the tongue, is useful, even though each moment, each movement is conditioned.
But getting back to your original question or point, yes, often it's just replacing one kind of unwholesomeness with another, like when we think we shouldn't watch TV, for example, because it's attachment, and then instead of that kind of attachment, there's other kinds. Without any kusala, then it's just replacing one kind of unwholesomeness with another, or suppressing one kind of unwholesomeness and having another arise. That's why we learn about the kusala aspects.
Isn't this no different from what some meditators find inspiring when they go to meditation? They think they have less dosa. And they think that, or some people think that they want to meditate so as not to have so much dosa. This again is like you are particularly concerned about one aspect of your life and you want not to have it. So instead of studying something, instead of understanding, you just want to be able to do, want to be able to not watch television.
Still the idea of my dosa and...
Ajahn, just now Sarah was talking about metta, and it reminded me of something I was thinking last night. I was wondering whether if metta is developed by virtue of Panya understanding metta as metta, or also because Panya understands all realities as just Dhamma.
Panya understands anything as this.
So the understanding that it's just Dhamma
not
can also, for
anyone.
Example, if someone shouts at me, there's the understanding of sound as sound, thinking as thinking.
No rule.
So that, but that also can condition more metta.
No rule.
Just yesterday, I want to hear more about the precept about drinking.
What about a person in the old days, in the Buddha's time, no matter, he heard a lot of the teachings of the Buddha about precepts, but he still drank before he died. He became enlightened. So, different? Because I think that it depends on the accumulation of understanding of reality. Otherwise, it's this I all the time who try to control Dhamma. But when there is understanding, it depends on the level of understanding, how much is there. One person might see the danger of this, the other person might see the danger of other thing. See, not a rule at all. But it depends on whether it's time for anything to arise. Not just I want it to arise every day or not to drink at all, but it depends on what is conditioned just to arise and falls away, not under anyone's control.
So that person during the Buddha's time might have had people around him telling him, don't drink, drinking is bad, but it didn't make any sense to him. But when he heard the Dhamma at that time, he just stopped.
No expectation for anything at all, because who knows one's own accumulation. How much for this and how much for that. Only when it arises, it is conditioned, so one knows by then the accumulation. Depends on accumulation.
Yes, so yesterday we also discussed that, because... Excuse me?
You'd like the person to be what you like, and that person would like you to be as what he likes. So what will you do?
One could be concerned about the other person's welfare, because one knows that the drinking habit can lead to different kinds of harm.
But what can you do? The understanding person.
I mean, for example, I'm sure many here who have observed the way I eat know that it's going to be harmful for me. Right? But you don't just tell.
Well, I think that out of concern, one can point it out. One can point out that if one eats too much of that fatty, oily food, it may be unhelpful, but that depends on, for that person, whether they continue eating, or the person who's drinking, they know anyway, because one's pointed out so many times that it's harmful and it's not good. But if they continue anyway, then that's according to their accumulation. So that's what's meant by being understanding.
And he may say, I know.
You've told me 1,000 times.
So the point is whether one's saying something out of kindness and consideration or whether it's just because one would like it to be changed for oneself. One would like the other to be another way. So that's the point. And I think you had a question, one of you had a question about why...
Right and wrong reasons for giving up drinking.
What are the right and wrong reasons and about...
I think at that point there was some discussion that because drinking is a hindrance, can be a hindrance to understanding because it's lead to forgetfulness, and so that can be a possibly a hindrance to understanding. So my question was, if one
person... And that's the reason that you don't drink, but for the others, say different. Only the person who knows.
But if I stop drinking for that reason, then because I understand that it is a hindrance, then whether that is a self trying to do, because this can be a way that I think that if I stop drinking, then it creates condition for understanding. So whether that is also a self trying to create a better condition for understanding.
Maybe while you listen, you just want to drink. While you are listening to Dhamma, instead of understanding it, you might think about drinking. Who knows? No expectation. Just understand that which has a reason, like now, that is seeing all the time. Who thinks about that? Who thinks about understanding it? It arises and falls away, and we talk about other things. No attending to that characteristic which arises and falls away.
And I think all we can say is it depends on the citta. It could be with some understanding, or it could be just with the idea of self, who's going to have more understanding, wrong view. It could be either. One can't generalize.
Can you be the world manager?
I mean, because you may think that I should not drink because when drinking, there's less... there's no opportunity for understanding. If I'm not drunk, I have better opportunity to understand. But then again, what about other situations? Is there understanding? Or are you just lost in the story because of the idea of self that I should not? Because the test is whether there's understanding now. If you're thinking about different situations about the future, what about now?
So all the precepts are precepts because it harms oneself and others.
We can say all akusala.
On akusala, so one can stop drinking because one understands that it's harmful to oneself. And
is the understanding enough?
Mm-hmm.
It depends. It can condition many kinds of thinking depending on right understanding at what level.
Mm-hmm.
One knows that other kinds of unwholesomeness are harmful too, but can
depending
one,
on accumulations.
Yeah.
But I just want to say it's like not the thinking that I stop drinking for more understanding Dhamma is not the only reasons for someone to stop drinking. Because you mentioned about if someone think that, okay, because drinking is a hindrance to understanding, so I'll stop drinking so that I might have more understanding, so that it's not the only reason for someone who...
And Tom, I mean, what is drinking, right? It's just a situation. When we talk about hindrances to understanding, we're actually talking about dhammas that are hindrances to understanding.
We just
get lost in stories about situations.
Just following her point. Yeah.